This podcast is for investment professionals only. The value of investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and investors may not get back the amounts originally invested. Past performance is not a guide to future performance. The information is not an offer, solicitation, or recommendation of any funds, services, or products, or to adopt any investment strategy.
Welcome to the Investor Download Podcast. My name's David Brett, and on today's show, using data, we're going to try and make some sense of a tumultuous COVID-ridden 2020 so far. We discuss fears of a second wave.
And of course, that would have quite a noticeable impact on the economy, as it will probably provoke a lot more lockdowns and restrictions, which of course would have a knock-on effect to activity.
The effect on consumer confidence.
Although confidence has stabilised, it's at quite a low level. So, for example, the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index is at levels that we haven't really seen since sort of 2010, in the early days of the recovery from the global financial crisis.
And the issues facing the largest economy in the world.
There are some big issues, though, coming up for the US, not least that the budget deficit this year is heading for about $3.5 trillion of GDP, a record level, about 70% of GDP. It's the sort of numbers that we saw during the Second World War.
Hello, how are you? I hope you're all safe and well. Welcome to the show where we discuss the trends affecting markets and the economy now and in the future. On today's show, I speak to Schroders chief economist Keith Wade. We took a deep dive look at data and what it's telling us about how the global economy is beginning to recover or not from the effects of imposed lockdowns as a result of coronavirus. We'll also take a little glimpse into the future with a focus on the largest economy in the world, the US. But in the first part of the show, to set the scene, we looked at data illustrating where countries are in relation to each other emerging from lockdown.
On Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts, you're listening to the Investor Download.
So, we looked at the Oxford University Index, which ranks countries on a scale from 0 to 100 based on where they are in lockdown. Zero being normality and 100 being full lockdown. I should say that all the data in this show is correct as at July 22, 2020. The index showed that the US and the UK, with scores between 65 and 70, were lagging well behind their European peers. The likes of France, Sweden and Germany are scoring below 40.
And this is an index that Oxford University have developed, and they look at nine different parameters that relate to the lockdown, so whether or not people have been told to stay at home, whether they're being told to work from home, can they use public transport, they have to wear masks, can they go back to shops, and so on. A whole host of indicators there, and they're scored, and it creates an index. And what you can see here is there is a gap that's opened up between the US and Europe, where, such as in Italy or France, Germany, there has been quite an easing back of the lockdown. So that is enabling businesses to get back to normal. And of course, the critical service sector, which has been so badly affected by this, and what we saw in those GDP numbers I mentioned, it was the service sector that really bore the brunt of the slowdown. You know, they will be able to get back as the lockdowns are gradually lifted.
Despite economies remaining in some form of lockdown, we are seeing a rise in cases globally, which could affect an economic rebound if governments decide to enforce more stringent lockdowns to control the spread. So the next set of data we looked at was from Schroders Data Insights Unit. It showed worrying rises in cases over the last 7 days of nearly 500,000 in the US, nearly 300,000 in Russia, and over 250,000 in India.
In most economies now, we are seeing quite a fall off in the number of new cases and the number of new fatalities, thank goodness. But the US, of course, has seen that second wave coming through. So you've seen an increase in the number of cases now rising quite sharply. Fortunately, the number of fatalities has not gone back to the level it was, say, in April. So we haven't seen quite such a follow through as yet. And we are waiting to see whether that does happen. We know there is a lag lag of 2 to 3 weeks. The COVID tracking project put up an article last week talking about that lag. So they're still concerned that we will see the US begin to pick up again quite sharply. And of course, that would have quite a noticeable impact on the economy, as it will probably provoke a lot more lockdowns and restrictions, which of course would have a knock-on effect to activity. The other one I would highlight, of course, is India, which looks like it's going slightly exponential. And the number of new cases in India now is actually greater per day than the number of cases in the US. So a bit of a concern for emerging markets.
So we know what the state of the countries are in lockdown, and we've looked at the coronavirus cases. In the next part of the show, we're going to look at some indicators that might guide us to tell us how the economic recovery is going.
Get in touch with us by email at shorterspodcasts@shorters.com or visit our website, shorters.com/investor download.
To gauge the type of economic rebound we're experiencing, a lot of people look at a measure known as the Purchasing Managers Index, or PMI. It measures the prevailing direction of economic trends in manufacturing across 19 industries. A score above 50 suggests growth to meet demand. A score below 50 suggests contraction as demand subsides. Europe, UK and US and Japan are all scoring below 50, but have bounced back strongly from the extreme drop-off during lockdown. But does that indicate a V-shaped recovery where the economy falls sharply, then bounces back and keeps going?
Those PMIs around the world have bounced back pretty sharply, and that has helped to fuel expectations of a V-shaped recovery coming through. Europe is actually leading a little bit in that one, and I think that's generally because the service sector is getting back to normal more quickly than it has been in the US. But generally, we are seeing quite a good pickup in economic activity, suggesting that things are beginning to expand again, particularly in the manufacturing sector rather than the service sector.
The big question is, have we seen most of the bounce back in the case of the US? The old economic adage is that when the US sneezes, the world catches a cold, apt given the pandemic. But the US is still the world's largest economy, certainly the consumer economy. And if it's not buying stuff, then the rest of the world will suffer. So employment figures are hugely important. The more people are employed, the more confident they are in their job prospects, and the more they're likely to spend.
If we look at, for example, initial unemployment claims, we can see that after, of course, surging at the beginning, as a lot of people were laid off when the crisis hit at the end of March and into April, the economy was in a major lockdown. They then began to fall away. And that's indicating that the unemployment rate, number of people unemployed, is gradually falling. The issue is that the rate of change has really slowed down enormously. So initial unemployment claims are not really changing very much at all. And in fact, the initial unemployment claims actually ticked up slightly in the last week. Unemployment rate is coming down, but again, it's quite slow. We will get more information about this on Friday when we get the employment report. And we would expect the employment report to show another fall in unemployment. So, you know, that would be good news. But you can see from these indicators that we're probably not going to get a big fall. So in other words, we've had a good bounce back in the US economy, which really went through May, June and part of July. But it looks like the data at the end of July was beginning to slow down a little bit. And that's having an impact on consumer confidence. So if you look at something like the Conference Board or University of Michigan, you can see those drops in consumer confidence that took place as the slowdown hit, or the recession hit the economy. And although confidence has stabilized, it's at quite a low level. So for example, the University of Michigan Consumer Sentiment Index is at levels that we haven't really seen since sort of 2010, in the early days of the recovery from the global financial crisis.
So we have seen a strong rebound as lockdown was eased in the US, but are tailing off more recently. But why is that?
Well, I think that's primarily because of the, two things I would say. I mean, first of all, the return of some of the lockdowns and the slowdown of lifting of those. But I think the other factor here is that when we think about the profile of recovery, there's a first stage that we go through of real pent-up demand coming through. And we saw that quite a lot in the goods side of the economy. So sales of goods in the US economy are already back above the pre-pandemic levels. And I think that's because, you know, people have delayed, they've been unable to make the spending. or they can actually do it online and order something online. So I think part of that pent-up demand came through, and I think that's beginning to fade now. A lot of people have met that demand. And then, as I say, I think it's the return of the pandemic, the concerns, the uncertainty that people face. And of course, now we're getting a better idea of the challenge of coronavirus and how it means that a lot of businesses have got to restructure, they've got to be different. And it means that people who work in those businesses are thinking about their earnings potential in the future and so on. And that is going to make for more caution. So after an initial wave of pent-up spending, I think people are now beginning to take a longer-term appraisal. And you know, a number of people will be saying, well, you know, it looks like we will have to do something different because, you know, clearly there's going to have to be major restructuring. It will take a long time before it gets back to the sort of capacity levels that we saw before. So I think that's the factor that's beginning to come through. And in previous studies of pandemics, they're not a huge number, because thank goodness there haven't been a huge number of pandemics, but each of them do show that consumer caution does tend to last quite a while after the initial rebound in economic activity.
We can see some evidence of that coming through in consumer spending, particularly credit card spend. We looked at data showing credit card spending on hotel and restaurants, but started with airlines, which shows that credit card spending activity has just returned to just 40% of its pre-lockdown level.
You can see that big drop off. You've got a recovery, but it seems to have leveled out now to about 39% of its previous level of activity, which is really quite disappointing. The airline industry does seem to be in a very difficult place at the moment. Looking at hotels, looking a little bit better than airlines. And I guess a lot of people are, you know, foregoing flying, but still holidaying in the US as they are doing around the world. Staycations are in vogue. And that's taken up the level of hotel stays to about 62%. So there's still a bit of improvement, bit of recovery coming through there.
And also, we're seeing a similar story for restaurants.
Again, you've had quite a good pickup coming through, but it does seem to be stalling and leveling off around about 70%. So the numbers will gradually improve. I do think that consumers are in a reasonably good state in terms of their income and balance sheet. So, you know, one of the interesting things that we've seen in this crisis is actually consumers have been reducing their debt. And you look at household incomes, and they've actually picked up a bit since February. And of course, that is really very much to do with what Congress has done in terms of providing those enhanced unemployment benefits, and also the stimulus checks that came through. So it's clear, and Congress is negotiating at the moment, it's quite clear that we need another fiscal package to come through as these measures expire. Now, no agreement has been reached between the Republicans and Democrats so far, but we do think that an agreement will be reached. It's a bit of a concerning time for the consumer, but remember that consumer savings rate, the sort of cushion that consumers have, has gone up to 26% in the US economy, which is an unprecedentedly high level, and of course does reflect the benefits from the unemployment benefits and the checks that people have been provided with. So what we're saying is not all of those checks have been spent yet. So even if we don't see a fiscal deal for a week or so, then we still think the consumer could continue to spend. They have the wherewithal to do that. And that will keep activity going and keep the economy recovering.
In the final part of the show, we focus on the battle between inflation and deflation and what the future holds for the economy. So, there's a bit of push and pull in the US economy. On the one hand, you have low interest rates and the government putting money in people's pockets. On the other, you have uncertainty over job security and whether a second wave of the virus will force another lockdown. That leaves a question mark over whether we'll see inflation or deflation. Inflation is good because it helps reduce the value of debt, but it will be tough on consumers as prices will go up at a time when there is so much uncertainty. Deflation will drive prices down, but will also hamper the economic recovery needed to get out of this. So what will it be, inflation or deflation?
inflation versus deflation has been a big topic that we've been discussing with our fund managers and clients. A lot of people have been concerned about the pickup in money supply in the US and saying, well, that must inevitably lead to higher spending and higher inflation. Well, as you can tell from what I've been saying, a lot of that increase in money supply is actually reflecting increased savings in the economy. So people aren't spending it. And what we call the velocity of circulation has actually fallen quite substantially in the US. So we are actually more in the deflation camp, and a couple of indicators here just to support that. The first is the Goldman Sachs Commodity Index. You can see how that's dropped off very sharply. And in the past, when it's done that, inflation has either gone negative or turned to zero. So that suggests to us that we're going to see quite a bit of weakness. And again, the core inflation rate came in at just under 1% last week, giving Jerome Powell plenty of leeway to sound very relaxed about the outlook and, you know, say he's not even thinking about raising interest rates. And then on the right-hand side is a longer-term indicator of inflation, which is really just the GDP growth rate pushed forward. And you can see that the slowdown that we've been talking about will actually weigh on prices over the next year. There's very long lags in these processes, so we are not concerned about inflation on that time horizon. There are some big issues, though, coming up for the US, not least that the budget deficit this year is heading for about $3.5 trillion of GDP, a record level, about 17% of GDP. It's the sort of numbers that we saw during the Second World War, if you really have to go back that far. So, you know, that's going to be a big challenge, because ultimately I think that debt will have to be funded and we will see tax increases going forward. I don't think they need to happen immediately. We can see from the Treasury market there's no concern about funding at the moment. But, you know, that suggests to us that if you look at the level of debt in the US economy, then, you know, that level of debt is going to increase quite a bit going forward.
Which begs the final question. With so much swirling around the economy, what type of recovery will we get? Keith first explains his concerns over signals of a W-shaped recovery.
That's where we get the rebound coming through, but then we see a double dip. And that's really driven by a second wave of coronavirus. So, you know, there are already concerns that the coronavirus has been coming back during the summer as lockdowns have been lifted. And the concern is that in the winter, when more people are inside, less scope for social distancing, then we will see a further pickup, particularly because that will coincide with the flu season in the Northern Hemisphere. We don't think the recovery is going to be as strong as many people have suggested. And we think that the recovery is going to look a bit more like a U-shape rather than a V-shape. So, you know, we've had a bit of a V so far, but it's clearly losing momentum. And we think that, you know, going forward, that's going to be more of the pattern that we're going to see. Our central view, though, is continued recovery. As we go through 2021, we do get growth. Fiscal policy is helping. Monetary policy is helping. We do get the growth coming through, but we don't get back to the level of activity that we were at before the crisis.
Well, that was the show. We very much hope you enjoyed it. Keith writes regularly for Schroders. His latest article is entitled, Could the Bounce Back Be Quashed by a Second Wave? You can find that plus other interesting content at schroders.com/insights. You can also read it at schroders.com/the investor download, where you can also listen to all our back catalogue for all our shows. If you want to get in touch with us about anything in the show or ideas for future shows, our email address is schroderspodcast@schroders.com. You can subscribe, rate and review us at Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. But most importantly, keep safe and go well. Cheers.